I'm Elaine Jenkins, Managing Editor of the International Journal of Stroke. This podcast is an accompaniment to the Stroke Rehabilitation and Recovery Roundtable, which gathered experts from around the globe, from Australia, the UK, France, New Zealand, Canada, the Netherlands, US, Switzerland, Finland, just to name a few. Stroke recovery research involves distinct biological and clinical targets compared to the study of acute stroke. We know that moving preclinical treatments into the clinical realm has been fraught with notorious difficulties. One very well-known area has been, of course, the incredible disappointments with neuroprotection. In comparison, stroke recovery involves distinct biological principles and a very different time window. In fact, it's unlike acute stroke at all. We spoke to Dr. Dale Corbett, who is the lead author on the SRRR paper on enhancing the alignment of the preclinical and clinical stroke recovery research pipeline for consensus.
My name is Dale Corbett. I'm a professor of neurosciences at the University of Ottawa in Ottawa, Canada, and I'm also the scientific director of the Canadian Partnership for Stroke Recovery. The preclinical side of stroke recovery is extremely important, I think, for, you know, developing, identifying biological targets that might be useful for future clinical trials. But it's really important that those working in the preclinical field are very aware of what the situation is on the clinical front as well, in terms of such things as chronicity of impairments, the types of impairments, and so on. So what we were trying to do in our preclinical working group was to come up with a series of guidelines and recommendations for developing, you know, models that would have the sensitivity for detecting, for example, long-term chronic impairments, which is what happens in human stroke, you know, appropriate outcome measures that would be, you know, sensitive for, you know, looking at impairment versus compensation and things like that. So really trying to develop a pipeline for discovery that could be related to the clinical side of stroke recovery. If you look at the field of stroke, you know, we had a kind of a very bad time in the last 20 years or so, where many of the preclinical studies, particularly in neuroprotection, had failed. And this really happened, I think, largely because there was not much two-way discourse between the clinical scientists and the preclinical researchers. So one, you know, felt the need that we really had to get our field of stroke recovery off to the right start. It's still a relatively new field, and we don't really want to make the same kinds of mistakes that were made earlier in the field. We mostly focused on motor deficits, really, because motor deficits are the ones that have been most extensively studied. They have obvious impairments that can be easily quantified. They relate quite well to human motor impairments. And in our discussions, we talked about, you know, cognitive impairments. We talked about emotional disturbances like depression. But we felt that on the preclinical side, that the modeling just wasn't there yet, and that for this present round table, that we should really just focus on the motor impairments, and then hopefully at the second round table, we'll start to delve into the cognitive and emotional disturbances such as depression, which are extremely important and very common. It's just that the modeling is not sophisticated enough yet, I think, to tackle those, at least in terms of coming up with recommendations and guidelines.
What does then the preclinical testing tell us in terms of long-term functional impairments?
A whole variety of different tests that investigators have used over the years, but if you look at them carefully, you'll see that a number of these ones have been picked for simplicity. So they're like very simple neurological deficit scores, or the ability of an animal to stay on a rotating rod or cylinder. And so they work okay for picking up what we would call acute, early acute impairments in the animals, but they recovery or compensation more likely takes place very quickly with these kinds of tasks. So they're not very useful for detecting long-term functional impairments. And so what we ended up doing was really looking at the tests that have been used and then picking the ones that, one, are very sensitive, and two, are able to show impairments, you know, weeks or months after a stroke, which is, you know, what you see in humans. So an example of that would be the skilled reaching tasks, so upper limb function. And in those tests, either with a single pellet reaching task or with a Montoya staircase, it's quite clear that animals with a stroke to the motor cortex will have impairments in these tasks that never fully recover. They will reach a plateau after maybe 5 or 6 weeks, and then they remain at that impaired level for months afterwards. And that's really very similar to what you see with humans who have comparable injury. So we really tried to find tests like that and to encourage people to use a test battery, because that's another thing. Many investigators just simply use one outcome measure. And, you know, you would never do that clinically. You would use a battery of tests. So we really encouraged a battery of sensitive motor tests.
And so how did that then connect to tissue outcomes?
Well, tissue outcomes, I mean, it relates quite well to tissue outcomes. But with tissue outcomes, it's I think we had pretty good discussion, and many of us have come to recognize that it's not simply the amount of tissue that's remaining or the amount of tissue that's been destroyed, but location is extremely important. So you have to take into account not only the volume of injury, which is the standard measure that most people use, but also the location. So, for example, if you have a cortical stroke, but you also have a little bit of striatal injury, then the recovery patterns will be very, very different. That striatal injury seems to really disrupt some of the plasticity and reorganization that would happen with a purely cortical injury.
So in terms of brain imaging and biomarkers, that's obviously very interesting. Area, and it's obviously an important collaboration. Could you give us a bit of a background of what you are looking at there, and about the potential parallels between animal imaging and potentially human assessment?
Yes, I mean, the animal imaging, it's possible to use many of the same kinds of, you know, imaging techniques in animals as it is in humans, not in every case, but many of them can be used. And so this is something that I think is an easy win for the preclinical people to really try to use, you know, parallel imaging methods as are used in humans. So we certainly, you know, we're encouraging, you know, that kind of thing. And some of the imaging techniques allow you to identify particular biomarkers. So it might be integrity of a cortical spinal tract, you know, how much of that is remaining, maybe predictive of eventual recovery. The amount of white matter loss, so that's a little trickier when you have work with rodents, because they don't have the, you know, the massive white matter tracts that you have in non-human primates and in humans, but it's still possible. And then on the biomarker side, aside from you know, these structural biomarkers, we think that it may be possible for us to develop, you know, biomarkers from brain, maybe from blood, that would help us predict recovery. And in some cases, they may provide targets for human interventions, you know, because we've seen a lot of clinical trials come up with negative results. And there's really been no biological target. And so we think we really need to develop some of these biomarkers. So at least an intervention can be evaluated as to whether it's actually produced a change in this or not. So the biomarker field is very exciting right now, and I think it's an area where there will be a lot of cross-fertilization between clinical and basic scientists. It's kind of a more of a newer concept, I think, to the preclinical investigators, but in many cases they have the tools to identify what some of these biomarkers might be.
So can imaging stratify animals for recovery?
I'm not sure that imaging can, and it's...
Then I asked Dr. Corbett if imaging can stratify animals for recovery, and he was quick to suggest that we can do much better, referring to the proportionality rule, which is basically based on human recovery studies where investigators have said that you can predict recovery of most patients based simply on their initial deficit. Dr. Corbett says that what they're finding in the animal studies when they do the same kind of analysis on the very, very large cohort of animals, they're finding that the initial deficit is not going to be able to predict recovery on all subjects.
So it may be possible with imaging to stratify animals' recovery, but it's likely that you'll have to do something more than that. We've just completed a rather large study where we examined a cohort of more than 600 animals and tried to predict their recovery based on things like the initial severity of their impairment, which has been used clinically to predict outcome in a large population of patients. And what we find is that the initial impairment can predict recovery in a subpopulation of animals, but these tend to be animals that are less severely injured and have smaller infarcts. And if you really want to be able to predict the recovery patterns of all the animals and cross the entire severity index, then you have to bring in other sort of measures. And what we found is that if you combine the initial impairment with the infarct volume and the intensity of rehabilitation, that is, did the animal engage in rehabilitation above a certain threshold level, then it's possible to predict the recovery profiles of every single animal out of a cohort of over 600 animals. So this formula works very, very well. So I don't think if you try to predict recovery with just one measure, that it will really fit all the subjects.
And so how in the long term did you investigate how to develop a more effective translational pipeline?
Well, in our planning, what we did was, we really put together an excellent team of individuals who kind of represented the kind of cross section of stroke recovery experts on the preclinical side, from very young investigators to more seasoned investigators, and we really identified, what were kind of the mistakes that have been made in the past and are still happening. So we're really trying to make those aware to all investigators in the field so that they'll raise the level of research going forward. And then we also identified, a number of things that we kind of really need to do to make us work effectively. So, for example, there hasn't been a great deal of what would be multi-center preclinical trials. There are a couple of groups that have done a little bit of this, but really nothing much on the stroke recovery side. So we identified that as something for the future that would be very beneficial. We also talked about, data sharing and big databases, tissue banks, and things where, people may have unique specimens. So, for example, one group might be working with quite elderly animals, and so that tissue and data could be, used by others rather than everyone, trying to to work and develop a, you know, an aged animal model of stroke recovery.
You've been listening to a podcast interview with Dr. Dale Corbett, Professor in Cellular and Molecular Medicine in the Faculty of Medicine at the University of Ottawa in Canada. And he was speaking to Carmen Lev Jenkins, Managing Editor of the International Journal of Stroke. This podcast was developed by the International Journal of Stroke, which is published by SAGE and is the flagship journal of the World Stroke Organization, as an accompaniment to our scientific and clinical articles on the neurological subject of stroke. The World Stroke Organization is the world's foremost society with an aim to reduce the burden of stroke globally. Please consider becoming a member. We have both professional and lay member categories.